This is The Fall Line. We're in the process of working on several cases right now. Two have been slowed down by COVID, and two by FOIA, and another involves multiple interviews that are taking place over weeks. But we have some really fascinating discussions to bring you between those releases. Soon, we'll be discussing what audiences really want out of true crime, its worst moments, and what it can be at its best, with friend of the show and host of Voices for Justice and Disappearances, Sarah Turney. And this week, we're adding another addition to our databases series, one you might not have considered. But much of the true crime news we get these days is transmitted via the internet, if not from podcasts, then on social media. TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, forums, information and misinformation spreads like wildfire. Rumors, conspiracies, leaks, ignored press embargoes, crime scene photos, fake stories, it can all spread very quickly, and it can be hard to get rid of. That's why so many people who follow cold cases head to a particular Reddit forum when they're trying to dig up information, real, trustworthy information on a case. There's a sub called Unresolved Mysteries that's been active since 2013. Since then, it's grown exponentially. It takes a team of 24 moderators with a variety of skills to run the sub, and you can search the archive posts for just about anything. Cold case disappearances on unsolved murders, or less serious topics, like the Georgia Guidestones or the Toynbee Tiles. True crime, though, is the mainstay of the forum, and it's perhaps the greatest resource for discussion on unresolved topics on the web, as long as you like forums that follow rules, because it is not a free-for-all. Every group develops its own code of ethics. But what makes Unresolved Mysteries unique is that by its design, it requires posters to write narrative, informative posts that include plenty of sourcing. So it's become a kind of interactive encyclopedia of the unsolved. You can search for almost any case. And on Unresolved Mysteries, there will be numerous threads from past years you can explore, all sourced and written from different angles and perspectives. Some might cover the same basic ground, but the contributors will always be new and offer up their own sources. And because of the rules, the structures so carefully created by the moderators, it becomes a resource worth revisiting. That's actually been a problem for the forum's writers, who've been plagiarized by bloggers, podcasters, and even reporters who've lifted their painstaking case summaries and monetized them. But they keep creating the resource and even joining the moderation team because the project keeps getting bigger. And it shows no sign of stopping. Here are just a few of the top thread titles from this week. Remains found in car submerged in a creek in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. The unexplained death of Caroline Byrne. Suicide, murder, or accident? Sabrina Eisenberg. 5-month-old Florida baby missing for 25 years. DNA identified in search for Brianna Maitland, 17-year-old girl who went missing in 2004. Nambour, unidentified man over a decade remains a mystery, possibly New Zealand descent. We had a chance to talk to two of the longtime Unresolved Mysteries mods, Adam and Sam, about their time working for the sub. In case you're unfamiliar with a moderator's role on Reddit, they volunteer their time to make sure a subreddit or a discussion forum runs. That means enforcing rules, keeping an eye on threads, helping new members, making judgment calls about posts and guidelines, and other responsibilities. Keep in mind, this is voluntary work. Two other Unresolved Mysteries mods submitted some thoughts to us via email, as did the creator of the sub, Tom. He's no longer involved in the day-to-day running of Unresolved Mysteries, but because he was integral to its beginnings, we wanted to ask him a few questions over email. He was kind enough to send us his written responses, which I'll read for you here. Tom created Unresolved Mysteries in 2013, when, as he puts it, he was finishing up his degree and moving out of student housing. He told us that, quote, I found myself with a fair bit of free time during that period and really enjoyed mystery-type posts on Ask Reddit. I'd get to the end of a thread and wish there was more to read. But sadly, any mystery subreddits I could find were pretty small and inactive. So I took an opportunity to fill the niche I'd found and created Unresolved Mysteries, making the first few posts myself whilst plugging the subreddit anywhere I could find the opportunity. Pretty quickly, the popularity of true crime became apparent. While I tried to balance it out with more varied posts of my own, it was pretty clear in which direction the user's posts were going to skew. The focus happened almost immediately, driven by the community. Myself and the early mod team were just along for the ride. We were just there trying to keep things clean. We did introduce tags for the post very early on as a reaction to this, so that users who weren't interested in true crime would still be able to find interesting content amongst the huge number of murders and abductions. End quote. You'll hear a few more quotes from Tom and from the two other Unresolved Mysteries moderators, Belle and Nick, who submitted written commentary during our interview with Adam and Sam. It is a really interesting discussion that gets into how we engage with true crime as creators and audiences, and as the people who, sometimes unintentionally, become the caretakers of information repositories and the responsibilities that then come along with the choices that we make. Consider the following interview a great companion to our upcoming conversation with Sarah Turney. We think you'll find a lot to think about in both. Adam has been a mod for 5 years now, and Sam has been modding for about 2 years. I asked them both how they became involved in Unresolved Mysteries.
I was a user first. I have always been fascinated with mysteries in general, as well as true crime. When I joined Reddit in 2014, I found Unresolved Mysteries pretty quickly, and I really enjoyed reading the posts there, and I was very impressed with the quality of the submissions.
I started on the sub about, I think it was late 2013, early 2014. I've always been into mysteries ever since I was a little kid, so I was just like naturally drawn to that at the time.
Adam, I know that you and I have talked about this before, but approximately your best guess, I'm not sure how exact you can tell me, but how many users are there on Unresolved Mysteries?
As of a few minutes ago, it was 1,516,914.
So I guess you can tell me exactly. Is that a large Reddit subforum?
I would consider that fairly large, yes.
How much time goes into modding this sub? How many people are involved? How do their different skills come into play in handling all the work?
The time that goes into it varies from moderator to moderator. Some mods might spend a lot of time on Reddit performing various duties. Others will pop in and out when they can. Some might go inactive for a while for personal reasons. It really just varies between person to person. Currently, we have 24 moderators. That might sound like a lot, but with everyone living their lives, it's just enough to make sure that we always have coverage for a sub that has over 1.5 million subscribers. The moderators do have a diverse skill set. Some of them are very technical, and they can set up things like bots and auto-moderators that can automate things that make our lives a bit easier. Others are really good about monitoring for reports and user questions. Others are more geared towards community interactions and AMAs. And we had one mod who was very familiar with the Reddit admins, and she was somewhat of a liaison for us when we interacted with them. Some of us were also posters before we became mods, so we're very aware of what makes a good post and the guidelines that go around that. It really is a group effort here in Unresolved Mysteries, and we all have something to bring to the table.
Unresolved Mysteries has a lot of specific rules for posts and for cases that may be posted in the forum and how they may be posted. For instance, what defines an unresolved mystery? So what are the rules for that? I know there are rules, for instance, about the age of a case.
The case age rule keeps things orderly. It respects ongoing law enforcement investigations. It protects the families of victims, and it discourages witch hunts. A lot of mysteries and crimes that are recent have a good chance of being resolved quickly. So this is a good rule that protects the mods of the community and anyone involved in the moving pieces of investigations that are early in their life cycle. The other guidelines we have when it comes to user submissions are in place to encourage quality of the posts. We do not allow personal mysteries that aren't documented by the media or other credible third-party sources. We also take doxing very seriously, and we will take appropriate action against users and content when it breaks the rules in general. I define an unresolved mystery as any mystery where concrete information still hasn't come to light. The answers just aren't there. There's at least one thread that can be examined and talked about where things are still kind of just up in the air. True crime is very popular, but any kind of mystery is welcome. I've seen food-related mysteries, shipwrecks, lost art, and more. In fact, the other day I saw a post about theories surrounding the extinction of a certain species of parakeet. So we'll get all kinds of stuff in there, and as long as it's a mystery, it's good to go. I definitely encourage more non-crime-related mysteries, and I know at least some of the other mods do as well. I would love to see more non-crime content, and we see people in the community asking for it too. However, this is a thing where the community has to step up and be the change they want to see. We can moderate and we can encourage, but we can't control what content gets submitted. Ultimately, we welcome any kind of mystery that follows the sub-rules.
So how old does a case have to be precisely?
6 months.
Adam, I first became acquainted with you because you were posting this series on unresolved mysteries that I was super interested in. And it was your Unidentified in Georgia series. And in those posts, you were sharing doe cases from across Georgia. Some I knew about, some I didn't. And I'm almost certain that no one else reading them had heard of the cases before. It's kind of the perfect example of how the forum functions. And I think the best way the forum can function. It gets cold cases with little or no media attention in front of a million plus people. But it's also a super big responsibility. One of the things I really appreciate about Unresolved Mysteries is we've been doing this series on databases for the past 8 months or so. And I realized, and this is one of the reasons why I contacted you about doing this interview, is that I've come to kind of treat Unresolved Mysteries as a kind of database, in that if I'm thinking about a certain case or a certain topic, I will go and search the sub to see if posts have been made. And one reason I do that is I know it won't be a series of theories and conspiracies. It will be a series of orderly posts with case write-ups and citations and sources. And that has a lot to do with the rules that you've structured. Can you explain a little bit more about what you expect out of a write-up, why the parameters are in place, and what purpose you want posts to serve? And I guess a related question there is what do you want readers of the forum to get out of it?
I expect a good faith effort when it comes to write-ups. I discourage copy-pasting or off-topic posts. Posts should include as much information as possible so that other users don't have to dig around to find the relevant details, because it should all just be right there. With a community as large as this one, I want to ensure that things stay as neat and orderly as they can. Above all, I want posts on unresolved mysteries to be informative. I want people to come here and be able to learn and interact and just dive into the subjects that they want to dive into.
Tom, the creator of the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit, had some thoughts on the structure of the sub as well, and the prevention of conspiracy or unsupported speculation as a feature in its inception. He wrote, quote, "As a rule, the subreddit required sources for every mystery, and any conspiracy-type posts were pretty quickly shut down. The subreddit was also created around the same time as the Boston bombing, which Reddit famously responded to terribly. I was very keen not to allow anything resembling that kind of runaway speculation or witch hunting, so that played into the strict moderation policy too." End quote. We asked Adam and Sam about the concept of the name Unresolved Mysteries and the balance of handling crime and lighter topics all in one place.
When we talk about crime, and you've given us a forum and a place to seriously talk about crime, which I really appreciate because there are very few places to do so. Missing persons, homicide, unidentified persons, no matter what the cause of death may be. Some people might bristle at first at the idea or concept of thinking or chatting about their deaths or disappearances as unresolved mysteries. In the same way that I think that Unsolved Mysteries, the TV show, if it was introduced as a new concept today, it might be critiqued a little bit differently if it hadn't first premiered in the 80s and had all the nostalgia that it does now. But when you read The Sub, it has a decidedly serious slant. So how do you approach the concept of mystery here? The sort of mix of true crime, as Adam said, with parakeets and all different kinds of mysteries. You know, how do you sort of approach that idea of someone's death being a mystery alongside, you know, a shipwreck? How do you manage that kind of balance?
I agree that the word mystery can be a bit awkward when talking about true crime. My hope is that people who come to this sub see that we take things seriously and see that we're not here to treat the subject matter frivolously, and that we conduct ourselves in a way that is ultimately respectful of both people and content.
Another thing about unresolved mysteries that I really appreciate is that when you go to, say, Wikipedia, which of course has many differences, it's static, there's no back and forth conversation, but it's also going to mostly cover famous cases. Unresolved Mysteries is going to cover both famous cases and little known cases. When people post about famous cases, that's where there's going to be the most likelihood of controversy, conflict, etc. Do you have any guidelines in place outside of, you know, the rules of polite conversation about what can and can't be posted or discussed when it comes to these famous cases?
Well, obviously, no doxing, no naming suspects that haven't been mentioned by the media or law enforcement already. As long as the content is mystery, follows the rules, and is respectful, it will likely have a place on Unresolved Mysteries. Well, we will intercede if we are aware of information that is off limits per the request of law enforcement or a family. Otherwise, we encourage general, respectful, and responsible discussion and consumption of information on our sub.
That last one about not mentioning suspects that haven't been named by law enforcement.
Because I find that interesting, because that's certainly not a rule across the board in true crime communities on Reddit.
And definitely not withholding information at the request of law enforcement, and definitely not at the request of families. Has that always been the case for Unresolved Mysteries? How did you develop that rule? Why do you have that rule?
I mean, it's kind of a tightrope, you know, because, I mean, there's always going to be pressure to just give the information that's there. But, you know, I find that it's just courtesy, you know, it's just, you know, is what we're posting, is what we're allowing a benefit to our community and truly a benefit to the case? Or is it just, are we throwing caution to the wind? Are we just allowing everything? Are we going to allow rampant speculation? And there's a balancing act here between speculation that's fine and speculation that goes too far. And so I think this, as a mod team, that's something we just talk about, we discuss, and it's probably going to be a case-by-case basis. You know, obviously things that are well-reported, we're probably going to report on. You know, if multiple credible news sources are reporting this information, likely we're probably going to run it.
In this next section, you'll hear us discuss an unidentified decedent who was known prior to his identification by the pseudonym Lyle Stevick. It was one he provided to a hotel. This is a case we'll discuss more in future when we cover ethics in true crime.
You know, if something leaks and it's, you know, and it's obvious that this is, you know, and it hasn't hit the airwaves and it's retracted quickly, but it's kind of just almost an underground information. A good example of this, I think, would be the identity of, John Doe?
Lyle Stevick.
Lyle Stevic, exactly. That John Doe's name is floating out there and is still floating out there. It was a lot of places have purged that information, but it's still available. And I know at least some subs and places still have a kind of a memorandum kind of banning revealing that information and posting about it.
Yeah, even his Wikipedia page still carefully edits that information out because it was a request of the family. And I think this goes back to my question when I asked you, what is this forum for, right? And if the forum is for education, if the forum is for a place where people can go to find good information on cases, that has become increasingly hard to locate online, right? Where can we find facts on a case that have been checked? The sources have been checked as well as we can check them. And I feel like you've tried to make unresolved mysteries that. And more to your point about those tougher calls, sometimes there's information, the idea of leaking can be a little more difficult. Is something leaked if it's accidentally been made public? For instance, we know that recently information was accidentally released by a judge in a high-profile case, and then that information was recalled. But it was too late. The information had made it to a court docket, and then it was posted online. And it included the names of minors and others not directly involved in the case. And what people then chose to do with that varied. Some people redacted that information and shared it online. Some people shared it online unredacted. Some people turned it into podcasts. So it was technically publicly available, but the ethics there are pretty muddy. Are those the kinds of subjects that you discuss as a mod team? How do you handle things like that?
That's definitely something we discuss on a case-by-case basis as a team. For me, my main concern is that I don't want somebody to learn from a Reddit post that their loved one was murdered. And I don't want like a completely innocent person, especially if they're a minor or an anonymous victim of a crime. I don't want them to suddenly find their name attached to that case if they don't want it to be. So at that point, it's like, is the information properly redacted? Is it potentially helpful to the case? Is it being reported by a credible source? And if it meets all of those three, it's probably something we would allow. But like I said, it's on a case-by-case basis.
One of the other Unsolved Mysteries moderators, Belle, added in her written interview that, quote, "We would have likely allowed it if it had been confirmed or published by a major media outlet. However, if that had not been published or confirmed by anyone credible, we would have likely prohibited that as being unverified information, that is, not confirmed by more than one public credible source." The judge's action was accidental, and it was obviously not followed by a press release confirming and publicizing the info, and therefore it would have likely been off limits. That's a big reason why we do not allow social media links. We don't need to be the place where someone links a tweet that causes a crisis to an ongoing case. We asked Adam and Sam about some of the shifts they've seen in unresolved mysteries and in the larger sphere of the cultural approach to open cases since the sub's inception.
The largest change I've seen is just the sheer number of users. The growth that the sub has seen has been phenomenal. There are more posts being made. There are more comments being made. It's just so much busier, and I think that's a good thing. Our mod team is also much larger now. It's not just, you know, a group of five or six of us anymore. We communicate a lot. We have our own Discord server where we talk both business and fun. It's a much more involved machine, and I think it's great. I also think we've grown more as a community. A lot of subs are kind of these hyper-anonymous, impersonal spaces where it is, like you said earlier, a free-for-all. Unresolved mysteries can still be a silent and anonymous place if that's how you choose to approach it. But I believe that the community is much more willing to talk amongst each other and interact and to make recommendations to one another. We are very lucky in that we have a community that is overwhelmingly respectful and supportive of not only the subject matter of the sub, but of each other and of the mod team.
And I've noticed that the sub is one of the only places consistently where little known cold cases can get in front of a large audience. How seriously do you take that particular responsibility? Adam, I know that's something you've thought about with your Georgia cases. And Are there particular measures in place to support that particular environment that the sub can continue to be used for that particular purpose, for those smaller cases?
Honestly, when I first started my Georgia series, I didn't think about it that much, but it became very apparent. I first started to think about it a lot because of something a regular commenter on that series said to me. He said that these posts might be either the first time or the first time in a long time that these cases have gotten any sort of broader attention, particularly online. And that stuck with me. Another thing that stuck with me is that you do have to be careful with how you handle true crime and how you handle these cases, because on the internet, everyone could be watching. Anyone could be watching. You know, family, friends, anyone. And for a few of these cases in this series, I've had people claiming to be family, people claiming to be friends reach out to me. I never verified them, so I can't be 100% sure. But, and all of those interactions were positive. It is definitely, it just taught me to just be cautious with it, just to be careful and intentional and to be as respectful as possible with the information that I have.
It's the same for me. I try to focus. I do write for the subreddit sometimes, and I do try to focus on lesser known cases. And like Adam said, you don't really know who's reading it. There's always a really good chance that somebody who knew the victim is going to read it at some point. So I just try to be as respectful as possible, just try to stick to the facts as much as possible.
I would also say that we currently don't have any mechanisms in place to encourage these types of posts and coverage. In fact, I think it sometimes can be very difficult because some of these lesser known cases, a lot of them don't have a lot of information attached to them. I found that with, especially with my Georgia series, you might find a John Doe who it just lists just the most bare amount of information. It might list some estimates about physical characteristics, and that might a general location of where they were found, and that might be about it. So it can be tough, especially when we have guidelines that require, a certain character number of narrative attached to it to be able to fit it in. I had to combine some of them and cover a few does in a single post. It can be difficult to cover some of these lesser known cases because there's just not a lot of information there. It doesn't mean that they're not worthy of being covered, though. I've always had the belief that regardless of the circumstances, every John and Jane Doe deserves their name back and deserves at least some attention.
Part of getting attention on a case means that people who are involved, whether that be law enforcement, neighbors, or even friends and family, will see the posts. We spent some time talking about how people who are involved with cases, whether that just be on the surface level, someone with a small relationship, or a direct loved one, will interact with the sub, and how the moderators handle that. The first thing that Sam covered was how they verify if a person is who they say they are.
We do have a vetting process in place for people who are involved in cases who might have information that they want to contribute that isn't already reported in credible news sources. The main thing is if you have a picture of yourself with that person, we consider that verification. Probably our most popular verification route is if you're a professional and you have a professional email address, we can confirm it that way. We just want to make sure that that information is coming from a legitimate source and not from somebody who's pretending to be close to a case that they're not actually involved in.
Let's say that you do have a family member or a friend and they are getting a little hot in the comments. Would you be giving them a little more leeway, a little more space than you would the average Reddit user?
I would, just because I know that we're dealing with a very emotional and traumatizing topic for them. So I might give them a couple more warnings than I would a usual person. But if they continue to insult people and be very antagonistic, then they would be banned or suspended as well.
Have relatives or loved ones ever contacted you about the posts on the sub? How do you handle that? And is there a process for managing the availability of the content and the feelings of the family and the loved ones?
I have had people reach out to me personally through private message claiming to be a relative or a loved one. I did not go through the verification process with them because none of them requested to interact with the sub in any way. There is a verification process, as Samantha went through. I definitely think we can take their feelings and into account. And I think that is a case-by-case basis that we would handle with the mod team as a whole. I think this is going to be a controversial question for the mods, because I feel like there are two camps here with this. I suspect that some of them would say that if it's publicly available information, for example, if there are multiple news reports about it, if it's the information is very easily publicly available online, that, you know, it's there, it's out there already. Others would probably lean more towards, you know, just being considerate. Okay, well, if a family member and they're verified and they're asking to take it down, well, it's just good courtesy to do so. And so I feel like you'll find different opinions there on that.
I would probably lean towards the latter camp. I think it's just a courtesy to the family.
It's not an easy question. I mean, this doesn't just come up for Reddit, right? It comes up all over true crime.
Absolutely. I'll add that I lean towards the latter camp as well. I tend to go with if someone requests the information be taken down and we verify that they are related, or we verify that they are who they say they are, then I lean towards being more comfortable complying with that.
Moderator Bell's view is a little different than Adam's and Sam's. She writes that, quote, "I personally do not consider the feelings of anyone when I am approving or removing content. I'm evaluating the content according to our rules and standards and then applying those faithfully. Does this mean I have no compassion for the families or survivors? Of course not. I'm incredibly sympathetic. However, it has absolutely no bearing on my moderation. If the info is public knowledge, verifiable by credible third-party sources, it's free game. We're not the only place hosting that info or discussion, and unless they are going to shut down the internet, I'm not caving just because they are upset that people are discussing a case. Again, sensitive info, leaks that are unconfirmed, all of that is removed anyway. So if we're allowing a case, it is because it has been sufficiently publicized and discussed for at least 6 months. Are sensitive feelings more important than getting the case in front of as many eyes as possible in order to get it solved?" End quote. Nick, the other mod who answered the questions in written form, feels that addressing concerns isn't something that can have an umbrella policy. Nick writes, quote, "How we handle it depends on the situation, and we often have mod discussions before getting back with them. This has proven to be a good way of handling things. We take into consideration many things before taking or not taking action on certain content," end quote.
This one is something that a lot of our listeners have asked us, but I think you are actually more likely to have run into this. Have you ever received tips or leads that were submitted directly to the sub? And if so, how did you handle that information?
I have not. And I think Sam might have a better answer to this.
Yes, I actually have. It was a couple years ago before I was a mod. Somebody had sent me a private message with information about a case that I had written about. And I honestly didn't really know what to do with it at first. I kind of sat on it for a little while. I couldn't really confirm anything that they were saying, and the kind of information they were giving me was, I just felt kind of skeptical that they would be coming to somebody on Reddit versus a police officer. But I ended up going to police about it not too long afterwards. And yeah, we were able to confirm that, yes, that information was credible. It was coming from a credible source. The case hasn't been solved yet, but I do think it probably brought investigators a little bit closer, and I hope it does. It felt really good to contribute, and that something I had written was able to actually help. And I hope it does eventually bring the family some resolution.
Unresolved Mysteries was part of a chain of events that revolved around Linda Pagano being identified. Her remains were found in 1975. It started with a genealogy researcher who was researching cemetery records, which eventually led her to law enforcement and a case file, which she then posted information to Reddit, Unresolved Mysteries specifically. From there, it ended up going to Web Sleuths, where Carl Kopelman saw it. Pretty shortly after that, Linda was listed in Namus, and Carl and law enforcement together saw the similarities, and it went from there. That is the only one that I am 100% on. Sam might be able to speak for some others.
Yeah, so okay. There was a young man who was found in the 90s. He had passed away in a car accident. And the only thing anybody really knew about him was that he was a fan of the Grateful Dead, because he was wearing a Grateful Dead shirt and he had some of the tickets for one of their concerts. And there was a Redditor by the name of Zombie Gray, who she became very interested in that case. And she put together like a little unidentified person's flyer and she posted it on Imgur, which is an image hosting website. And somebody who was roommates with him in college in Illinois recognized him there. And he only knew his name as Jason. But after doing some more research, they were able to find out that his name was actually Jason Callahan, and that his mother had tried to report him missing back in the 90s when he disappeared. But she had no idea exactly where he had disappeared from, so she didn't know what agency to report it to. So he was never formally in any missing persons databases or anything. And then that led Zombie Gray and another Reddit user named Pastor of Muppets to start the Grateful Dead subreddit. And that subreddit was intended basically as just a way to keep up with updates in that specific case. And then it morphed into a forum where people post potential matches to unidentified persons. And I believe there have been a few matches there. I can't really recall any names. It wasn't anything where law enforcement officially gave credit or anything. But I know there have been some where they actually did turn out to be right.
Now, I know that you both are interested in many, many cold cases that you'd love to see get attention. But if I made you pick right now, which I'm going to do, one cold case that you could get to the top of unresolved mysteries, the top of the page, and just get really consistent attention on for weeks, and hopefully get, you know, the million plus subscribers' eyes on, which case would you pick and why?
I would choose Carlene Tangleson. Carlene is a girl who went missing from a mall in Macon, Georgia in the summer of 1972. I just really feel for that case, and I would love nothing more than for it to get more coverage and for it to be solved.
There is one serial killer case that happened in Kansas City, Missouri, back in the 80s and 90s that I've been extremely interested in and that I've been working on a write-up for, where basically multiple women, most of whom were involved in sex work on Independence Avenue in Kansas City, had disappeared, and they were later found murdered in the Missouri River. And there was a suspect in that case. He was charged with one of the murders back in 1996, but then the charges were dropped later because of lack of evidence. And ever since then, it doesn't really seem like there has been much movement at all in that case. But there are a lot of very interesting details about it that I'm kind of surprised it doesn't really get that much attention. So I'm hoping maybe with my write-up, I can possibly get a little bit more, I can possibly get more eyes on it, because all those are still unsolved.
We asked Adam and Sam about AMAs, or Ask Me Anythings, that they host on Unresolved Mysteries. In the conversation, you'll hear Adam mention Mark. That's Mark Beckner, the former Boulder, Colorado chief of police. Mark Beckner participated in an Unresolved Mysteries AMA about 7 years ago.
So, on Unresolved Mysteries, you've often done AMAs, which are Ask Me Anythings, and AMAs are a super popular feature of Reddit and really any social platform. But I really think they're particularly embedded in Reddit culture. Can you talk about some of the AMAs that have been the most surprising, impactful, or even heated on Unresolved Mysteries, and why?
I did not watch it. I just read a summary of what happened, essentially, with that. So before I was a mod, I believe, there was a interview with the former, I believe, chief of police of the Colorado town where JonBenet Ramsey was murdered. They did an AMA with him, and supposedly by all accounts, it went well. However, it got a lot of attention, I believe, elsewhere on Reddit and in the media. They went back and deleted all of their answers. So that was a little controversial, and that was the most crazy AMA I think we've had, from what I've heard. As far as our other AMAs, I really enjoyed hearing from Ryan White, the director of Netflix's The Keepers. Most of our AMAs are podcasters or reporters, but we've also had some writers as well and some other folks. Our AMAs see a wide variety of cases and coverage, which is just amazing. I'm thankful that these people take time to come out here and answer some questions for us. There is a relatively new feature called Reddit Talk that I think is going to be the future of the AMA. Last October, Unresolved Mysteries had our first Reddit Talk. We hosted John Lesieu from Penn Live, and he talked about the Harrisburg Murder House, and a group of mods, actually Sam and I were there together on that. We hosted that with him and asked him questions from both our end and from users. I found it to be a much more engaging experience overall. And we've been working on our second Reddit Talks. We'll be hosting Anthony Redgrave, Dr. Amy Michael, and maybe some more to talk about Joseph Henry Lovelace and forensic genealogy. And that should be coming up here very soon.
So true crime gets discussed on other mediums that actually are attached to our identities. Specifically, I'm thinking about social media, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. There's at least some kind of connection. How do you think it operates differently on Reddit, which is, you know, ostensibly kind of anonymous? How is it actually happening more respectfully on Unresolved Mysteries than it is on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok? How is that managing to happen?
You know, I think that's a pretty good Unresolved Mystery right there.
I'm really not sure it should be the opposite.
Yeah, you feel like it would be the opposite. I think the mod team, starting from Tom and all the way down to our newest members, I think we've cultivated a culture of just respect. And I think that shows through our posts and through the comments that happen. And I think we've become very good at kind of nipping the buds of the more chaotic stuff when it does show its head. I think it's just the culture that we've cultivated over time.
If you could make any changes to Unsolved Mysteries, whether it be changes in Reddit's functionality or rules, or changes to the way the sub functions, or things you think would serve to make Unsolved Mysteries even better, you know, this is just, we're talking dream world here. What would they be?
Yeah, I would love to do more of these themed events like the one we did with the Transdale Task Force back in late 2020. We spent a week highlighting different unsolved cases involving transgender or gender nonconforming missing persons and unidentified persons. And then at the end of the week, we ended it with an AMA with the Transdale Task Force members. And I'd really love to do something similar with like a missing and murdered Indigenous women group, or even just a local group that focuses on various cases within their area. I think it was a really good way to highlight cases that didn't get the attention that they deserve from the public.
I agree completely. I would love to see more group-themed events, whether it's the Transdoe Task Force or the Missing and Murdered Indigenous. Or we can even do more things. For example, we could have a John and Jane Doe week, or we could have a mystery food week. So this would also encourage, you know, a larger variety of posts, which people want to see. For me, I think Reddit Talks really scratches that itch for me. Community engagement is the facet of moderating that intrigues me the most. I would love to see more opportunities for the community to connect, to talk, to get a better sense that we are human beings behind these screens.
The last thing I'm going to ask is something we ask everyone. And as I really do kind of view Unresolved Mysteries as a database, how can our listeners support your forum?
Come on over and read some things. Come explore. Come find the cases that you want to see and read about.
Yeah, no, just come over, join us. We would love to see new write-ups on cases as well. We're always looking for write-ups about virtually any cases that you can think of, anything unsolved. And I think it's just a really good place to discuss cases respectfully and hopefully get more eyes on them.
And I really appreciate you guys working so hard to make it that way.
Thanks so much to Adam, Sam, Tom, Bell, and Nick for taking the time to discuss Unresolved Mysteries with us today. How we interact with, participate in, and use True Crime Forums as a resource and as a place to discuss our thoughts and even get cases in front of new eyes is a conversation that we hope to keep having with people in this community. You can find a link to the Unresolved Mysteries Forum in our show notes. If you know a case that should be covered on the Fall Line, there's a link to our case submission form in the show notes as well. Thank you for listening. The Fall Line is a fully independent show, and we appreciate listener support. It allows us to do research, obtain FOIA, pay our content advisors, and support and donate to the causes we care about. If you try out the products we advertise, please use our sponsor codes. It really helps. If you'd like to support the show and the stories we cover, join us on Patreon. We are raising Patreon funds to continue to cover the cost of the Millbrook Twins billboard and to fund therapy for families who've been on the show. Each and every one of our patrons helps us to continue this work, and we are so grateful. On Patreon, you can get early ad-free versions of our regular episodes, starting at only $5 a month. We've also added monthly live streams and blog updates, starting at just a dollar. The Fall Line is written, hosted, and researched by Laura Norton, with additional research by Brian Waters, Kim Fritz, Kiana Burgess, and Michaela Morrell. Interviews by Brooke Hargrove. Produced, engineered, and scored by Maura Curry. Content advisement by Brandy C. Williams, Liv Fallon, and Vic Kennedy. And, as always, our most special thanks to Angie Dodd. Currently, our monthly donation is going to Private Investigations for the Missing. Please join us in supporting this nonprofit. They need funds to help families access the services of private investigators.